And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It's the 1st of October, and it's just turning 4 minutes past nine, and we're here for the next 3 hours, as you would know at this stage. Loads coming up on the programme, including Community Garda information. That's coming up for you just after 10 o'clock, but there's that and so much more besides. We want you to have your views. Raise issues if you so wish. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000, and fire over your comments via email if that's your thing. comments@highlandradio.com. And you can also watch us on our YouTube channel, on your Fire Stick, your Smart TV or your mobile devices. Just go to Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're streaming live. We're on the X platform too, and also right across Facebook. So you can engage and contact us and watch and listen no end of ways. Okay, let's have a look at what's making the papers today. The big news, of course, is the budget, as we were chatting to Lee there. There's no secrets really at this stage. It's all out there. And the Irish Times will go with it. Pre-election budget giveaway. A series of giveaways will see many families gain by thousands of euros over the next 12 months as the coalition seeks an electoral launch pad from today's budget. Tax changes expected to make workers on average wages about 1,000 euro better off, and a series of one-off payments in the coming months, including 250 euro in energy credits and two double payments of child benefit, an extra 840 euro for families with three children, will be among the measures announced today. Now, for many, that will be very, very good news. Anytime, especially at this time of year, that there's more money available to families which may well be struggling, it has to be welcome, doesn't it? I mean, people can question the motivation behind it, if it's an election budget or not, but you know what? As long as people that need support get it, it doesn't really matter much to me when it is. I don't know what you guys think. What do you think? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Are you more inclined to maybe vote for this government because of this budget too? Be very interested if you are one of those voters maybe that's undecided. So what do we know so far? Two double child benefit payments before Christmas, 280 euro per child. Universal electricity credits, 250 euro. I believe they're going to be paid in two 125 euro payments. Extra tax credits for renters. Students' fees are to be reduced by 1,000 to 1,500 euro in this academic year. Again, that will be welcome news to some of you out there. Wider eligibility for student grants, which has been a bugbear for quite some time. People missing out on student grants because of, you know, very narrow margins. Reduced VAT on electricity and gas extended until April, so that's nothing new. Extra living alone allowance, which will be good news to some. Lump sums for long-term disabilities as well. And then that's for this year. It is Budget 25. Universal social charge cut, the USC, controversial, was introduced as a temporary measure. It's not going to be removed, but it's going to be cut somewhat. Higher income tax threshold to rise by 2,000 euro and tax credits to increase. Free public transport for children under 9 from summer 25. Payments of newborn children, parents of newborn children to receive a once-off triple child benefit payment. So if you're due in December, I'm not sure if you'll get it, but certainly if you have the baby in January, I believe you will. Mortgage interest relief to be extended. 80 cent minimum wage rise. Free school books up to leaving cert. 1,500 additional special needs assistance, 350 additional special classes, junior cert, leaving cert fees waived. All welfare payments, including pensions, to increase by 12 euro a week from next year. Inheritance threshold to rise. Free hormone replacement therapy as well there. Long-term changes, extension of Help to Buy to 2029. 1,000 extra prison spaces over 5 years, which is great. If you've just committed a crime, you'll have somewhere to go. Land Development Agency, Irish Water and Air Grid in line to benefit from 17 billion Apple tax and AIB share proceeds. Or is that 1.7? Probably 1.7, I don't know. 17 billion seems a lot. 1.7 billion, I believe it is. Okay, so that's what the budget will have in store for you. We'll keep you updated, of course, with our news bulletins on the hour throughout the afternoon, and you'll be able to keep up to date with it as well on our website, highlandradio.com. So that's all coming up a little later. As I say, nowadays, there's very few surprises. It was sort of when negotiations went to the 12th hour as it relates to reducing VAT in hospitality to 9%. They didn't get that over the line, apparently, so that's not going to happen. It's going to remain at 13.5%. But I thought it was an opportunity, really, to target that so as not to reward those that exploit the public, the gouge, hotels, etc. Not hotels up here, but particularly down in Dublin. But that's a missed opportunity, so nothing's going to happen in that regard. But there are going to be other breaks, they will argue, I am sure. All right. In the Irish Independent today, and it's carried in many of the papers as well, modular homes paid for by the state to house Ukrainian refugees are now expected to cost, and wait for this, this is a modular home, €442,000 each. That's more than double the original slated cost of €200,000. And the Controller and Auditor General report found this. Now, the OPW are up to the neck in this as well. Costs have risen sharply for the housing programme that was supposed to save the state money instead of paying for hotel rooms to house refugees fleeing Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As part of the OPW-led project, 500 modular homes were to be rapidly built to house 2,000 beneficiaries temporarily protected. Because of the urgency of the situation, a proper value for money investigation or cost-benefit analysis was not carried out. The original projected cost was $100 million, but it's now expected to cost $289.3 million, according to the report published yesterday. It sets out a catalogue of changes, including an increase in the targeted homes to 700 before it fell back to a lower revised figure. But be that as it may, each of these units coming in at €442,000. Now, groundwork, site acquisition, services presumably adding to this, but still, 442 for a put-it-together house, €442,000. And obviously, look, these this was a plan put in place to house Ukrainians fleeing Russia. It's not about them. They're looking for accommodation. But obviously, this has caused a great deal of upset amongst people who are struggling to find their own accommodation and can't get any support at all, let alone a €442,000 put-it-together house, modular home. And of course, too, up here, people are going to read that a little bit differently because you will have people that are trying to access the defective concrete block scheme. The maximum grant, which is not achievable by many, is in and around the same that's being spent on modular homes. People are expected to build, you know, full concrete houses for that. And as I say, not everyone gets the maximum grant that is available. And it irks people because people aren't against helping others. But when the when the playing field doesn't feel level, that is when people get very frustrated and angry. The Irish Daily Mail: Israel last night prepared and indeed did invade Lebanon. Armoured vehicles were massing on the border as Israeli rockets hit the south of the country. Lebanese troops were last night said to have pulled back 5 kilometres from their positions along the southern border with Israel ahead of the assault. Israeli Special Forces troops have already crossed the frontier to lay the groundwork. US officials were last night locked in discussions with Israel about the best way forward as President Joe Biden desperately tried to salvage his ceasefire proposals, which has failed miserably. It's being called a targeted invasion, or whatever the phraseology is because then that means it's one step back from full-out war. Just note, listening this morning to some radio, a UNICEF advert begging people for money, for food, for water, for blankets, for children in Lebanon. This is not me taking a side, so to speak. This is a UNICEF advert talking of children sleeping out in the rain, not having any food, not having any water. 1 million displaced in Lebanon. 1 million displaced in Gaza as well. Many, many dead. Many children dead. Many young people dead. And obviously, Iran has an interest in what's going on over there. And America is providing the weapons to Israel to a great extent, and probably in intelligence support as well, is standing back as Israel. Obviously, they will argue it's a reactionary move, but as they go in and bomb the living daylights out of these two other countries, displacing many and killing others. And then America sends more troops to the Middle East to tell Iran to back off. So Iran, who has an interest in this area, of course, America is saying to Iran, you stand back and let them do what they're doing, or else, you know, you'll have us to contend with. And that's the way the world is at the moment. It's a scary old setup. The Irish Star this morning, the sister of Nicole Morey, who was killed by her own dog, including her own dogs, including an XL bully, believes new laws banning them that came into force today do not go far enough. Jolene Murray is calling for stricter measures on dangerous animals to be put in place following her sister's tragic death. Nicole, 23, was fatally mauled by her four dogs at her home in Fenimore, Limerick on June 3rd. From today, it's illegal to import, breed or sell an XL bully dog. However, existing owners will be allowed to keep their pets if the dog is neutered, microchipped and the owner dog licensed by February 1st, 2025. The new legislation brought in by Minister Heather Humphreys was prompted by Nicole's death. But speaking yesterday, Jolene said, the law they're bringing out, you have to have a license, you have to have papers. But my sister had all of them and it still had to take a death to bring in the law. I don't think there's going to be a big enough change in it. I think people are going to keep the dogs and then there's going to be more accidents and more attacks, but people don't feel the pain until it's at their front door. So what do you think? So at the moment, really, you can keep your dog if you have it at the moment. You can't rehome them. You can't sell them. You can't breed them. They have to be neutered, chipped. Effectively, what this means is if you have one at the moment, you're allowed to keep it. If you get a license for it, you're allowed to keep it for the rest of its natural life. I'm not quite sure what Nicole, Nicole's sister is calling for. Is she calling for them to be put down, to be taken from owners and to be eliminated at this point? She goes on to say, I think there should be stricter laws. They're not small little puppies. They're not dogs that you could just mess around with. They can just switch in 2 seconds. And Nicole had been out celebrating her 23rd birthday before she returned to her home and was attacked by the dog. So I'm not sure. I didn't hear the interview, but I'm not sure if the interviewer actually asked, well, what do you want? But the only step really beyond this would to have the dogs presumably taken from their owners and destroyed. Do you believe the new laws go far enough? And as the lady said there, maybe you only really feel passionate about this when the tragedy is visited on your own door. A bizarre story, and a bizarre in all the wrong ways, a horrific story, really, and you wonder what's going on. It's in The Sun and covered in a lot of papers today. It's about a man who became the eighth person accused of attacking a woman found in a bloody, tortured and beaten state in a flat in Dublin. He's remanded in custody. Dublin District Court heard yesterday that a makeshift blowtorch, heated hammerheads, iron bars and a stick were used to injure and beat the victim around her head and body. The attack came after she was brought to a North Inner City flat last Thursday, it was alleged. Emmett Black, 48, of the Mullins Dublin 8, was charged with false imprisonment and assault causing harm to the woman, 37, at Henrietta House, Dublin 7, and was denied bail. Garda Kieran Rogers told Judge Alan Mitchell the violence only stopped when Garda entered the flat to find the woman in a bloodied, tortured and beaten state. She told Garda she was brought to the flat in a car with a group of men, including Mr. Black, who allegedly escorted her to the scene. Judge Mitchell heard the following assault lasted more than 1.5 hours, during which the woman said she was beaten around the head and body with a hatchet, iron bars. She was violently attacked with a blade. It's very bizarre. Don't know what's going on there at all. And lastly, a study from another country. It's reported in the Irish Daily Mail and elsewhere. Drivers of electric vehicles are more likely to cause collisions than those who use petrol or diesel cars, a study revealed yesterday. Experts at Liro, the Research Ireland Centre for Software and University of Limerick, found EVs have recorded more at-fault insurance claims than fossil-fueled models. Sorry, there was another report from further afield. I thought that's what this was referencing. The study, which analysed claims and data from onboard sensors on EVs, also shows they are 6.7% more expensive to repair. It also found drivers of EVs and hybrid vehicles exhibit different behaviours, driving slower to preserve battery charge and braking less harshly. But despite their lower average mileage than traditional vehicles, this does not reduce driver risk of experiencing an at-fault insurance claim, the study found. Researchers said there is a 4% jump in crashes from electric vehicles and a 6% increase for hybrids compared to petrol and diesel cars. Why would that be? It's got nothing to do with the actual vehicles themselves. This is about driver behaviour. And I wonder, is it distraction? I wonder, is it people perhaps looking at the multitude of screens, which are present, I suppose, also on petrol and diesel cars. That being said, it's very hard to get a straight petrol, straight diesel now sometimes. Certainly it's very hard to get a straight diesel car. Is it distraction? Is it all the screens? Is it people sort of focusing on, the economy? I don't know. But if you drive an EV car, you are 6.7 times more likely to be involved in a collision that is your fault, which I think is kind of interesting. Any views on that or anything we talked about there, let us know. 086 60 25,000. Yvonne is with me on the programme now. Good morning, Yvonne. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. I've had this experience before and it's really unpleasant. You were travelling between Ballybuffet and Donegal Town. What did you observe there at the roadworks at McGrory's Brae?
Yeah, this was last night. Pretty bad night. Rain coming down. And as we were coming up McGrory's Brae heading towards Donegal Town, the line of traffic met an ambulance with blue lights. And for anybody that doesn't understand, when there's blue lights flashing on an ambulance, it is an emergency. Mm-hmm. And the ambulance had no room to get through. So everybody that was in that line of traffic had to go behind the cones where the roadworks are actually happening at the moment. Unfortunately for me, my car got stuck because it dropped down on a ledge between tar and rubble. Uh-huh. And only two gentlemen, two healthcare professionals, arrived on the road. They actually took the car out for me. Pitch black. There's no lights at the top of McGrory's Brae. And I just couldn't understand why there's no emergency lane for vehicles to get through. But apparently this is happening on a daily basis for our emergency services.
Yeah, so theoretically, I mean, was the ambulance coming from the Donegal Town direction?
The ambulance is coming from the Donegal Town direction,
so
yeah.
Obviously, traffic travelling, it's one lane at the moment, traffic travelling towards Donegal Town, headed up there on a green light. Obviously, then the ambulance passed the traffic, stopped at a red light because it's an emergency, and met the oncoming traffic midway up the Brae. And there's no escape route really there at all.
No, there's not. Absolutely none. You either go behind the cones at a point when you get entry to let the ambulance pass, or else you're sitting there facing the ambulance.
Yeah, and there's no the other side, which is closed. There's nothing, there's no lights there, so you know what you can and can not pull into, really.
Yeah, no, there's not. It actually was extremely dark up there.
How long
and you don't really notice this until you're in the middle of it.
How long did it all take?
Oh, probably in about 20 minutes.
What? Not for you to get about your car around, for the ambulance to get through?
Well, no, the ambulance probably got through fairly quickly.
Right.
But yeah, it probably took me 10 to 15, 20 minutes to get the car out.
Any
damage? Because it literally was, don't know, the very kind gentleman that took it out for me has advised me this morning to go and get the two tyres checked because she was sort of dragging on the edge, the edging.
Yeah, you have to check the inside wall of the tyres there
because
could be damage that you couldn't see. So other than you guys pulling in as best as you can, there's no provision there for emergency vehicles. There's not enough width.
And there's actually not enough width even when you pull in behind the cones to actually drive on, to be honest, especially when it's dark. And like, I didn't see that drop on the road because I was probably watching, you know, what I was doing in relation to the cones at the side and looking for an entry point to get back out onto the main road.
And if the truth be told to Yvonne, when we see the blue lights, we kind of be up to high dough. You want to get out of their way as soon as is possible.
Well,
that's me anyway.
I suppose I work in healthcare, right. So I mean, it's automatic for us to pull in because time is critical for the person in the back of that ambulance. Mm. Seconds count.
Yeah. And it's different during the day, of course, Yvonne, because presumably, I don't know if the ambulance dispatch can contact the contractor on the ground, stop traffic and let them through. I don't know. You think in 24 we'd have some sort of a system. But at night time, there's no system there. It's down to the ambulance drivers and the ability of the car drivers to get out of their way. I mean, I wonder what would happen. And I suppose this is a bit of whataboutery, but, you know, if an articulated lorry was in amongst all of those cars, presumably that might further complicate the situation.
I don't think there would be anywhere for the lorry to go.
Yeah.
Like, it is very narrow, and I appreciate works have to be done. But there also needs to be provisions put in place for emergency vehicles.
Mm-hmm. There has to be a technical solution where, well, either to stop the lights. I don't know how all that might work, Yvonne, but you would imagine just in this day and age with what we can achieve. But you're of the view something needs to be sorted quickly because,
yeah.
I mean, there's two things. Obviously, the first thing, the more serious thing, as you know, working in healthcare, Yvonne, every second counts. But also, if you tipped over and went in there into the ditch, or not the ditch as such, but the other side of the road, that obviously is a big problem as well. And we don't know yet what damage has been caused to your car.
No, I know that this morning.
Yeah. All right, okay.
And hopefully none.
And in fairness, you did get assistance, which is a good thing out of this story. A couple of people did help.
Yeah,
you.
Very grateful. And if the two guys are listening, thanks a million for helping me out last night. Because I suppose at one point I was like, I'm just stuck. I'm not getting out of here. But anyway,
okay, listen,
I made it home.
You did. Thank God for that. Listen, thanks very much for helping us highlight it, Yvonne. We'll find out a bit more information, see what the plan is, if there is a plan. And maybe someone who drives with the ambulance service, I know they can't speak publicly, could contact us and let us know if they have any concerns as well. But for now, Yvonne, I'm glad you got home okay, and hopefully there's no lasting damage to the car.
Perfect. Greg,
right,
listen, thanks a million for having me.
That's
take
our
care.
Pleasure. Take care, Yvonne. Thanks very much. Has that been your experience? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Now, before we move on, I want to mention our competition today. We had a superb response to it yesterday, so I want to give it a nice early mention so that as many of you as possible can be involved. And it's thanks to our friends at The Green Shoes. They've stores, of course, in Letterkenny, Falkara, Limerick, and down in Galway as well. And you can also shop online, greensshoes.com. It is Greens, G-R-E-E-N-E-S. And today we have a pair of Rikers to give away. Another lovely, high-quality brand. Yesterday it was Doc Martens. Today it's Rikers. So we're going to give you the opening line from a well-known song. And then you have to give us the title of the song. Now, yesterday's winner gave us the artist as well, which is a bonus, not necessary. But anyway, we just need the title. And we want you to text your answer, name and where you're from to 086 60 25,000. And the opening line of a song, or the song today, is I Come Home in the Morning Light. I Come Home in the Morning Light. What is the title of that song? I Come Home in the Morning Light. It's so recognisable, it's actually hard to say without putting the melody in there. So if you know the answer, text or WhatsApp the answer, your name and address to 086 60 25,000, and you today could be the winner of a pair of Rikers thanks to Green's Shoes. Check out greenshoes.com for more. And Gloria won the Doc Martens yesterday, just in case you weren't tuning in. Gloria Ford from Letterkenny. So Doc Martens went to Gloria. Who's going to get the Rikers? Get involved in that ASAP. It's free for you to enter, of course. We had a contact from another listener. Dog poo is really dangerous, says a listener. I've heard of players having a leg amputated because of dog-infected wound. I understand the club has CCTV. They should name and shame the owners of the dogs. Now, there's no context to this, but I actually believe that's as it relates to Donegal Town Rugby Club. I think they had an issue with dog fouling on their pitch. There's some nasty stuff in dog poo, but as I say, that's just a comment, and I believe that's what it's relating to. Hi, Greg. The people of Donegal are very lucky to have both No Barriers and the Stroke and Medical Rehabilitation Units in St. Connell's. Both have better rehab outcome for people than the National Rehab in Dublin. These both should be celebrated more. Well, No Barriers almost could have a co-presenter role on this show, because we have them on regularly because they do such amazing work, and they're always coming up with new and innovative ways or being recognised nationally for the work that they do. That being said, I will put my hands up The medical rehabilitation unit in St. Connell's is not something we've discussed on the show in my time before that I can recall, and be more than happy to do so, to give them a platform as well. Right, you're welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by political correspondent Sean Defoe. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. The excitement's almost gone out of Budget Day now, because we've a fair idea of the nuts and bolts of it, don't we, as to who's going to get what.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've got a good picture of the broad strokes of it, at least. I suppose we might start maybe with the social protection budget. It's one of the biggest, and €2.7 billion of a spend this year, including a €12 increase across the board in the social welfare rates, and then a whole host, 10 different, in fact, one-off payments that are going to be made to people. They include a double Christmas bonus of social welfare payments and another double in October, then two double payments of the child benefit that are going to come in November and December, and one-off lump sum payments for people who are living alone, carers, people on disability supports, and various things like that. So there's a very, very large, what's been described in the department as an unprecedented budget, actually, from that front. And then, yeah, across a whole host of other measures, we can list them off as you want to.
But yeah, go on ahead. Yeah,
where we are. Yeah, well, I suppose if you maybe pick up on housing is a big one that people are going to be asking about. There's going to be increases in the housing budget. There's going to be extension of the Help to Buy scheme out until 2030. There's going to be a tax on the residential hoarded land, effectively, as they see it. This was a big row a couple of weeks ago in the coalition, but has made it into the budget, or some of the big ones. And then the cost of living package as well is going to be close to €2 billion. And it's going to be see things like the energy credits for people, which will be worth €250 paid in two goes, one in November and one in December, of a €125 each. So, you know, between those, the one-off payments that people are getting, there is an awful lot in this, and it is the government splashing cash that they maybe otherwise haven't had. And when you look at other countries across Europe, they certainly don't have.
Yeah, in relation to the housing side of things, we learned recently, didn't we, that there is tens of thousands of homes that have been approved for planning permission, but developers aren't progressing with them because there's not enough money in it for them, really, effectively. So we can bring in an awful lot of initiatives, but if the developers aren't breaking ground, the houses aren't necessarily going to be built at the rate the government might want. Do you think there'll be anything in there to try and address that?
Well, so the one of the things the government points to around that is actually the Help to Buy. They say that, look, it is guaranteed €30,000 in the pockets of buyers, that you can go then and build your homes and know you're going to get your deposit and then get the money on the back of it. I think, like, it's sort of this mad situation where you do have builders, particularly when it comes to apartments, saying that it's not financially viable for them to do, and yet they're also not financially viable for people to purchase. So you will probably see, maybe not in this budget because it's been baked into a number of different budgets, an extension of the other government's schemes, the shared equity scheme, for example, and the Help to Buy out to the end of the year. And then where we're going to see a big focus on housing is in the Apple tax money. So they're not going to say specifically how that is going to be spent today, as in it's going to go on line item X, Y, and Z, but they are going to outline how it will be allocated. And a big chunk of that is going to go to the Land Development Agency, which has been in charge of identifying sites around the country to then give to developers, effectively, to help them undercut their costs of building and get more people building houses, selling state land cheaply in order to get houses cheaper. There have been problems with it. Some of the houses that they have developed are far from affordable, despite being labelled as affordable. But that is the general thinking about trying to bring that cost of building down, make it more economic for builders, and then, as a result, more economic for people to buy them.
In terms of school-going children and up to sort of third level as well, some measures being introduced to take the pressure off families in that regard.
Quite a lot. There is going to be a €1,000 cut in the student fees at third level, and also a 15% increase in the SUSE grants that people get. Also changes to who can get it. So there has been adjustments, and this was a cabinet last week, to bring more people into the net, if you like, of SUSE, so they can get the student grant. Then when it comes, this is one of the big legacy pieces of the budget, I think, when it comes to schools, is the free school book scheme. It's going to be extended out to Leaving Cert. So over the last number of budgets, it has gone from the situation that we all had, where we had to buy our books and they were very often quite expensive, to now there are free school books provided by the state through primary and through secondary level education. And an interesting little one in the education budget, actually, is there's money going to be given to schools next year to fund programs to make them phone-free places. So things like these pouches, which are basically electronically sealed pouches that a student just put their phone in at the start of the day, it gets locked up and they can only undo it at the end of the day at a machine outside of the school. So there's going to be funding towards that as well.
The old reliables, as they become known, cigarette tax is going to increase. It always does, doesn't it? And we've been waiting on this, I think, for a number of years. Vaping tax, for them to sort of say, right, okay, less people are smoking. Probably an element to discourage vaping as well. But now a tax is going to be introduced on vaping products.
That's right. So on the cigarettes, it's going to be somewhere between 50 cent and a euro added onto a box on top of the 75 cent that was there last year. Nothing on the alcohol this year. And then on the vapes, we don't have the specifics yet of how that is going to work or what percentage is going to be, but they are certainly starting to crack down on vaping, banning it for children, banning the advertising to children as well, and now putting the tax on. And Micheál Martin has described in the past vaping as being like the revenge of the smoking industry, so they definitely want to clamp down on that. Some of the other tax measures that might actually benefit people, you've got changes to income tax, so the point at which you pay the higher rate is going to be increased to 44,000 euro, which will help out people a bit to the tune of a couple hundred euro a year. And then also the USC. So the big change to the USC is that the 3% rate, which people pay on income between 25 and 70,000, that's going to be reduced by a percentage point down to 2%. So overall, I think Jack Chambers has said this budget will be worth about 1,000 euro into everyone's pocket, or the pocket of average workers at least, during the course of this budget. And they're two of the measures that they're looking at to put it directly into your pocket from your paycheck.
There was some hope that 9% VAT rate would be reintroduced for the hospitality sector. That's not going to happen now. That was an 11th hour sort of decision, I believe.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, the decision had been made before that. And as much as Peter Burke had tried to push it, and he had put it into yesterday, and even sources yesterday were saying, look, it isn't quite 100% settled, but I don't think it was ever going to happen. It has been probably the only really big loss or measure that didn't get over the line in a very big spending budget. Peter Burke was arguing that it could just be for cafes or restaurants or hairdressers, and not necessarily for hotels, because the big opposition in government is towards the hotels industry because of how around certain events and certain big gigs there has been very obvious price gouging going on, and that they can't then justify giving them a reduction in the VAT rate. They've decided not to go down the route of separating it out then for other people. So that will be one that I'd say a lot of businesses, a lot of small businesses in particular, and cafes who are struggling will be disappointed with this morning.
Yeah, and I presume the government will outline some sort of tax breaks or exemptions for businesses that would have availed of that on with lower incomes to sort of offset that somewhat, they might argue. And what does this mean in terms, Sean, of when we're going to have this election? Some of these measures are immediate, before Christmas, but this is Budget 25. Much of what you've outlined will kick in next year. What does this tell us about the timing of a budget? Mid to late November? An election.
An election, yeah. It's coming soon. It's definitely coming soon. It has changed over the last few years in that there's always been something in the cost of living packages that has happened in the year that the budget is announced. There's definitely more of it this year. There's definitely going to be more money in people's pockets before Christmas than in previous years. And I think it does signal that this is definitely a pre-election budget. Even in all the spinning and leaking that was going on yesterday, each party is looking at the different wins that it has and how it can sell them on the doors. So Fine Gael will be looking at the likes of income tax, but also inheritance tax, where you're going to see changes to the band there for what a child can inherit from a parent up to, I think, 400,000 euro. Fianna Fáil will point at the school books and will point at the housing measures that have come in as something that they secured. And then the Greens will be looking at measures like this baby bonus, which is that all new parents are going to get a 420 euro payment in the month that their child is born, and also reductions to the cost of public transport, where public transport will be free for under nines and remain at a 20% discount for other people. So they are all very clearly laying out their territory and the points that they can knock on doors with. I had a feeling the election was going to be called next week, next Thursday. I think I'm wrong in that now, because Simon Harris is travelling to Washington. He's not going to be back until very late on the Thursday
night. They don't mind making big announcements over in Washington. We saw Leo Varadkar do that. Just in relation to that, and I won't hold you any longer because I know you're up to your ears, But my understanding was is if they'd given two electricity credits totaling 250, so a total of 500, that would have required legislative change, which might have pushed the election back. There's no significance, is there, to them breaking that down into two 125 electricity credits. I'm not saying the whole election is hung on that, but one has to wonder, was that to free up a bit of time? I don't know.
Well, I think that was more because the rate of inflation has been coming down in energy credits and they didn't think it warranted the spend, because it has been a big spender. It's a lot of money to do not a whole lot for people. But look, I think the things that might hold it up at this stage are all pretty trivial. And once Simon Harris arrives back in the country next week, I think it's game on at any point for him to go up to the Oras and to then call the election. It could happen the following Tuesday, which would put the date at somewhere between the 15th and 22nd of November, which I think is still the most likely. Yeah. No one in government, or certainly Harris himself, has said next year, that's when we're doing. His language has gotten a bit softer. Haven't met a single other minister who thinks it's a good idea to go into next year. I think we're going in November. And when you see things like the OPW spending starting to rack up and build up as a story that could become the story of an election with a little bit longer for journalists to tease it out and look into other projects, I think he's going early.
Sooner the better, he might say. OK, thanks, Sean. That is political correspondent Sean Defoe there. And tomorrow we will try and break down as to what all this actually means for you, because, you know, we're hearing a lot of things in USC and this, that and thon. And there are calculators that are often put together, but we will try and get as best as we can determinations as to how this may or may not benefit you. Paul McLaughlin of Ballagher Garden Centre is going to join us for the last time this season. So we're in the garden for the last time with Paul McLaughlin. So if you have any questions for him as we are in autumn now, I think we can concede as much as we might try and resist, or questions for winter, or even planning for spring or summer next year, because it comes around very, very quickly. Paul will join us after 11. So any questions for Paul McLaughlin of Ballagher Garden Centre, text or WhatsApp them right now. And it might be easier for you to articulate it by way of a voice message. So if you want to ask your question to Paul via voice message, you can do that on WhatsApp as well. Greg, how are all these roadworks, new roads being built and no emergency lane being put in? It's crazy, says the listener. Are you on about once completed or whilst they're being built? My understanding is that every contract within it has to have a plan in place to deal with emergency vehicles. I could be wrong on that, but that was my understanding. This is Donegal County Council at its best. They've got traffic management, but still they haven't a clue about road traffic management. I'll just have to clarify, that's probably a TAI job, is it? I'm not sure if the council are responsible for that, but anyway, let me double check that. I don't want to attribute blame where it's not deserved. And last week, one before the break, from the Remelton side of Alcorns to the traffic lights at the Polestar, the traffic is backed up. The traffic has never been this bad. I'm a lorry driver and this will affect my hours. These lights clearly aren't working. Well, lorry driver, the solution is going to be an extended roundabout and more traffic lights. Where's that? What's that part of the road called, Caroline, where they're putting new traffic lights? There's different names on it. Anyway, I'll find out. It escapes me just at the moment. But anyway, I wonder how that will help or assist, if at all. Let's see. Charlie McGinty is club president at the Donegal Tan Rugby Club, or Donegal Tan Rugby Football Club, to give it its full title. He's with me now. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for the time this morning. Good morning to you.
All right, Greg. Yeah, good morning to you.
And I think, regrettably, you're having to put up another post about a mess on the playing surface. What did you encounter most recently, Charlie?
Well, I think it's been happening for about the last 3 or 4 weeks that we're coming across. There's a lot of dog mess being left on the pitch. And it's obviously causing a lot of problems because, as you probably well know, it's quite a risk health-wise, especially with children. And obviously we're having to hold up matches to get the dog mess picked up off the pitch or whatever before the games can even be played. So,
how bad is the problem?
Well, it might only be in a few places, but it's obvious it's something we've never had a problem with before. Yeah. And so we do have notices around the ground, and it is a private ground. So we're just sort of a bit concerned as to why it should be happening at this point of time. So.
Yeah, so someone's obviously, and I don't know if it's one or a number of dogs, but it's a big green area. They're bringing the dogs down, letting them run, poo wherever they want to, maybe throwing them into the car or walking home and leaving it for you guys to clean up before the kids play.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, they probably don't realise just how much of a health hazard it is, because it can cause blindness. It's all down to the eggs that are in the faeces. And although it takes a bit of time for it to sort of become dangerous, if it's not picked up fairly quickly, it could become a long-term problem. So.
Yes, and even without those health risks, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a rugby is there can be a lot of ground action in it, so to speak, or even getting it on your on your boots. It's very unpleasant, even without those health risks, and completely unnecessary. Really,
well,
isn't
if you
it,
take the, if you take the extreme situation, you could end up with your face in it because of being tackled or whatever, and it's just totally unnecessary and a bit inconsiderate by the people that are doing it. I know we've got our boundary, which runs alongside the beach, is quite open. So if dogs are let to run, then they could sort of quite easily get onto the pitch without the owners even being on there themselves.
So. Yeah, exactly. And also, too, like any club, a lot of the work is volunteer work. When you know people could be doing other things, they're going down to sort of try and bring the next stars of a sport on, or indeed just to occupy younger people. That time could be better spent than sweeping up dog poo off a playing pitch.
Oh, of course, yeah. And apart from the fact that it's a very unpleasant task to have to do, you know, it just should not be happening. And as you say, they're all volunteers. They're given a lot of time themselves, their parents and the coaches, and they shouldn't have to do it. So.
All right, OK, Charlie. Well, listen, we hope if it's one or a group of individuals, whoever it might be, might actually consider the implications for others and either keep their dogs off the playing surface, preferably because it is private property, or make sure that they pick it up, one or other, because we don't need this crack. All right, Charlie, thanks for your time. Take care. All right, Charlie McGinty there. Right, so the bit of controversy about name badges on... that hospital staff are starting to or having to wear name badges. It's not a local decision that's being made, by the way. And often when these things happen locally, the blame can land local. But this is a guidance that's coming from further up the chain. And there's been some controversy about name badges, full names on the name badges. People have claimed to have been approached outside work or have messages on social media or whatever it might be. There's just more an easier way to identify someone. You see the face, you have the full name. Not hard to track someone down on Facebook or Instagram if they happen to be on it. But anyway, if you're affected by that, by the way, and maybe you are a staff member and have an issue with them, or maybe you don't, you can contact us in absolute confidence, by the way. Text 086 60 25000 or call us on 07491 25000. We got this email in, though, from a listener, and it reads as follows. I was admitted to Letterkenny University Hospital earlier this year, and the one thing I noticed was no one was wearing a name badge from the time I entered the ED to being admitted onto a ward. Every nurse had a swipe card around their neck, but nobody was identifiable. At no time did anyone introduce themselves, and I was the one who had to keep asking, "Who are you?" By the end of my stay, I was just too sick to keep asking, so I eventually stopped. The reason I feel a name badge should be worn is to feel safe. I feel if there are no introductions, then no one is taking responsibility for my care. Personally, I was left feeling unsure and in doubt about whom to trust. It's important that the correct information is given to the correct people at all times. As a recently retired nurse with 27 years' experience, wearing name badges is crucial for three reasons, they say. First, it enables us as nurses to establish trust with our patients and allows them to put a name to the face of someone who will be caring for them during one of the most vulnerable times in their life. Secondly, the trust gives patients the confidence to raise any ongoing concerns or problems during their care that would otherwise be very challenging to do with strangers. Lastly, not wearing a name badge makes submitting complaints near impossible. Some patients will be too scared to ask for the name of a nurse, especially those patients who've been a victim of patients' negligence, incompetence or acts of abuse. In Ireland, we're so blessed with fantastic nursing care right across the board. But patients do have a right to raise a complaint when they believe any medical professional, including nurses, have neglected their duty of care. As nurses, we've both a professional and legal duty of care to our patients. These are simple points, but it makes the world of difference when you are sick. Regards, as always. Which is interesting and kind of sways me. I don't know, you see, I'm on the fence. I don't know. I'm not a nurse. I haven't been a patient. And I don't know the scenarios where this might be important, but this caller makes, or this emailer makes, some very interesting points there. I mean, if you are front-facing, being in a shop or wherever it might be, or even, say, for instance, someone like me or Caroline Orr, you all know Caroline's second name, you know my second name. I mean, if I didn't want to be contactable on social media, you probably would lock your account and make sure it was sort of for friends and family only, people that you confirm. I'm not saying people are being contacted on social media, but that seems one obvious way someone might be able to be tracked down. But as I say, this emailer makes some strong arguments. If there's counterpoints to be made, please let me know. We're interested in all views here, of course, on the 9 till noon show. But that was just someone coming from a different perspective. Now, they're a nurse for 27 years. Maybe things are very different now in terms of technology and what have you. But Facebook's been around for half that person's career, so maybe that's a moot point. Right, OK. We are going to go to the news very, very shortly. But we have a very quick chat with Darren Collins, the secretary of Sean McCool's GEA Club. Darren, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Hello, Greg. How are you getting on?
Good, good. Right. Problems with people leaving rubbish behind them. There are bins there. They're not using them. What's the story, Darren?
I suppose like any large event, Greg, when you have a combination of people and they're having their teas and their coffees, and you know, children are having their crisps and their sweets and stuff. It has been commented to us there at the weekend that there was a large combination of mess on the Sunday after the Saturday evening's games. You know, I suppose it's just culture of people just to leave the rubbish behind them now. And unfortunately, as a volunteer organisation, it's very hard for us to keep a handle on that, you know.
Yeah, and you see it in cinemas too. There's certain events people go to, and it's not all people, it's some people, but it's enough people that we're talking about it seem to maybe think that they can just drop it at their arse.
Well, that's one way of putting it, yeah.
Probably not the most polite way, my apologies. I forgot I was on the radio for a second, but you know what I mean, that's what they're doing.
Well, I mean, you see it on the public streets as well, you know, there's bins there, but people just seem to drop things at their arse, as you say. Like, we don't like seeing it. We like to keep our ground as pristine as possible. We have a full crew of people in there on a Monday to Friday, and they keep the ground impeccable. And, you know, we try to put out more bins, separate our recyclables, you know, and keep with the green theme. But we need the cooperation of the people visiting the ground to help us out as well, and just be mindful. Yeah. I mean, I suppose the best thing that ever happened is the recyclable bottles.
They don't leave them.
They're great to see the young people running around the games after, trying to pick up as many bottles as they can for a few pounds themselves, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Darren. Was it a particular issue on Sunday, or is it just this has been the culmination of it happening over and over again, and it's time to speak out?
Well, it's always been a problem, you know, but it's been I suppose everybody sees it. Nobody wants to comment on it. I think we received some criticism about it over the weekend, which is unfair because, you know, we are a club ground. We try to keep our facilities as pristine as possible. We have thousands of people walking through our gates every year. But we would ask if people who visit the grounds for the finals coming up now will, you know, just be mindful. And like, we are beside Drumbo Woods. We have a large amount of wildlife that come about, and when they see as a source of food, they come in and it adds more problems. So just look, take your rubbish with you.
Well, Darren, that's what it comes down to. You know, we always look for someone to blame or an organisation or an entity to blame. Bottom line is none of this would happen if people took their rubbish and put it in a bin. You know, we can't blame Sean McCool's for this. It's simply people who've bought a sandwich, a cup of coffee or whatever it might be, or brought in their own bottle or a bag of crisps. There's bins there. Put them in the bin. Don't dump them at your feet. Because it's all a group of individuals that are responsible. Not all of them, of course, but anyone who's leaving the rubbish behind them is responsible. Not Sean McCool's, in my view. But I do think any criticism, if you've got the bins there, any criticism you're receiving is unfair. OK, it's going to be a busy wee while ahead, and it's always busy at Sean McCool's, so just take your rubbish and put it in the bin or take it home. Darren, thanks for your time. Take care of yourself.
No problem. Right. Thank you, Greg.
Bye, Darren.